Good afternoon. My name is John Alterman. I'm the director of the Middle East program at CSIS, and on behalf of CSIS, it's my pleasure to welcome you to hear the Secretary General of the Arab League. Amr Moussa will be introduced by the Executive Vice President of CSIS, Robin Niblett.
Thank you very much, John. And it is my pleasure on behalf of CSIS and John Hamry, our president, to welcome you, Mr. Secretary General, here to CSIS. I think there couldn't be a more interesting time for you to be here. As everyone here in this room knows, the town is abuzz with discussions of the future of the Middle East, obviously with the release of the Iraq Study Group report yesterday, with a much broader discussion taking place, which you are very well aware of a comprehensive discussion about the problems in the Middle East, not simply taking each issue, whether it be Iraq or Israel, individually, but trying to think about them in a comprehensive sense. And the press conference that took place earlier today between President Bush and Prime Minister Blair, I think, was indicative of that search at the moment. But obviously, it is an exciting time, a very difficult and problematic time. Deadlock, especially in the Arab-Israeli situation in Lebanon. From an American perspective and maybe a European perspective, trying to understand the rise of what is called, at least here, the phenomenon of political Islam. And also a number of wider conflicts which seem to be spilling into this area, whether it be in Darfur, in Somalia, remarkably all of which come under your orbit and your aegis in your capacity as Secretary General. And really, I think all of us would agree there could be nobody better placed to be taking on these responsibilities right now than you. I think, as everyone here knows, Secretary General Moussa brings an incredible experience, both from his time at the UN as Egypt's ambassador, as permanent representative of the UN, as his 10 years as Foreign Secretary of Egypt, and now, since 2001, his position as Secretary General at the League of Arab States. I'd like to welcome you again. I'd like to welcome all of our guests here, in particular our distinguished guests, the ambassadors, obviously from Egypt, from Oman, from the United Arab Emirates, Iraq, Lebanon, and obviously the League of Arab States as well. John Alterman will be handling the question and answer session after the Secretary General's remarks. But in the meantime, thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to hearing your comments.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here today in this very distinguished center, addressing this very distinguished audience, and also very happy to be in Washington at this juncture where a lot of issues pertaining to our region are being put on the table. We are going through a very special, very delicate, very sensitive period of time with our agenda full of major priority items. The idea of, or the drive to reform the region, the debate about the so-called clash of civilizations, which is a euphemism for the clash or the conflict between the West and Islam. We have major security and political problems: Palestine, the Arab-Israeli conflict, the Iraqi situation in Lebanon, the Darfur question, the Somali situation. So, an agenda that I would call a very major and sensitive, especially when you come to discuss issues pertaining to the regional security and the nuclear file in the Middle East. I know the time is limited. It's only 1 hour. I speak half of it, and you ask me and give you answers the other half. So let me say the following. The city is abuzz with comments on the Baker-Hamilton report. As the region of the Middle East is abuzz with questions about the situation in Iraq and the future of that important country, in addition, of course, to the situation in Palestine and what would happen if there will be no peace process for a long time to come. We continue to consider the Palestinian question and the Arab-Israeli conflict as a major obstacle to peace and stability in the region. But with the developments that we have followed in the last few weeks and days, we have a ceasefire in place. We have talks, and I don't think that the talks have failed to achieve national unity in Palestine. We have been told, informed by the leadership of Hamas and the current government that they agree to the establishment of a state of Palestine within the borders of 1967. We listened carefully also to what Prime Minister Olmert has said in the desert the other day about withdrawals, about the settlements, about the readiness to accept elements or certain elements of the Arab initiative. So there are offers here and there, some partial, some do represent a serious departure from original positions. We should not let such signs fade away. We'll have to base our efforts now on such signs in order to rebuild the peace process that has been dormant, if not dead, for the last several years. It is our responsibility now to revive the peace process. And it is essential, it is vital for stability in the region, for our interests and the interests of all those concerned with the region, including the United States. It is time. We need a mechanism that would lead to the revival of a peace process, of a serious peace process, as we need the return. We need the U.S. to return to the posture, to the role of the honest broker. We have been promised by President Bush that a Palestinian state or state of Palestine should be established within a certain period of time, alongside the state of Israel. Well, we hope that before the president leaves office, the promise will be realized. And this cannot be without a viable, serious peace process to be moved now rather than tomorrow. To negotiate the questions of Jerusalem, of refugees, of withdrawal, of the future relations, and of the Arab-Israeli relations in general. This is the time. If you move to Iraq, it is indeed a major step forward to have the Baker-Hamilton Committee to issue such an important report, very interesting, full of very sound recommendations. I'm sure that the institutions here in the United States will consider it, will study the recommendations, and will try to move on, because the situation in Iraq is really deteriorating and threatening. We do need to work together to save that situation. I must say that all of us are facing problems. The Arab world cannot accept a state of confrontation, bloodshed, being or prevailing in an Arab country, an important Arab country like Iraq. I'm sure the United States, as you know, is also facing a major problem in Iraq. The Iraqis themselves, the neighbors of Iraq. So we are all on the same side trying to solve the problem in Iraq, to deal with the situation in Iraq in a way that would prevent anarchy and let the country move on to build the new Iraq. There is no going back, but there is always the way forward, and that's what we are trying to build. We talked about that today. We'll continue to talk about it, to see what kind of steps the U.S. is going to take and what kinds of steps we are going to take. And for your information, only 2 days ago, I called a ministerial meeting for the Committee on Iraq. And the decision was to call for a reconciliation conference, national reconciliation conference, to convene in Iraq, in Baghdad, within 4 months. This reconciliation is the case in point. This is the departure, the point of departure, if we want Iraq to stand on its feet again. Reconciliation, the reconciliation process, which was suggested, proposed, and executed by the Arab League, culminated in a major conference attended by all the Iraqi leadership in November 2005, and decided to have the conference, the national conference meeting in Baghdad. This process is being revived today, together with the report of the Baker-Hamilton Commission, and together with the efforts deployed by the neighboring countries of Iraq. Can we do the job? I hope we can. If we underline and mobilize all our energies to support a process of real conciliation, that Iraq would be the country for all its citizens, no partition, to emphasize the oneness of Iraq, the territorial integrity of Iraq, and that Iraq is for all its citizens, regardless of faith, religion, ethnic origin, or whatever. This is the essence of reconciliation. Is it possible? I say it is. Is it doable? I think it is. But it needs efforts. It might take time, but the bloodshed has to stop. On Lebanon, Lebanon is an important country for us in the Middle East. And the situation, the tense situation prevailing in Lebanon, is not a good omen for the region, not only for Lebanon, but for the region. I was there also last week in an effort to help, bringing together the different parties, just to achieve also reconciliation. I had meetings with all the sides, as the Secretary General of the Arab League should do. We cater to the interests of Lebanon, the country, to Lebanon, the state. I left a certain package for all parties to consider. I have reports that they are moving on, but also reports that the tension has not yet subsided. So we will continue to consider this package and then work on a regional level to help solve the situation, this problem in Lebanon, we hope that we'll do that in the possibly remaining few weeks of this year and the beginning of the next. Be it the issue of the tribunal or the issue of the national unity government or the issues pertaining to elections, all of them can be put on the table and negotiated and a middle ground or an acceptable solution would be achieved. We'll continue to help. We'll continue to do our job and fulfill our responsibility in helping that beautiful and important country in the Middle East. While in this region, and before going to another sub-region, which is Darfur, which is Sudan, I will say a few words about the nuclear file. It is a unanimous position now in the Arab world and in the Middle East that the nuclear file has to be seriously approached. A, the Middle East does not need any nuclear military program. B, we cannot deny the right of any country member of the NPT to develop its own civilian program, nuclear program. C, we will have to work together in order to discuss a proposal that has been there for 30 years now, over 30 years, about declaring the Middle East, all of it, free from nuclear weapons. Four, that we cannot do that if we address one program and ignore another. We will have to address the file from the standpoint of the Middle East and the dangers of having nuclear weapons in the Middle East, regardless of who. And this is not the question, the program in country A or country B. But if those two programs continue, there will be another program in country C and D. It cannot be a monopoly, except if we all agree that we should abide by one rule, no nuclear military activities or no nuclear military program at all should be permitted in the Middle East. And I believe this is in the best interest of us all, and not only the Middle East, but it would cover the Mediterranean and many larger areas around the Middle East, in Asia and Europe, and also Africa, because the zone free from nuclear weapons in the Middle East is closely linked to the consideration, the program that considered Africa a non-nuclear area. I here call for dealing with this issue, with this file, as the nuclear file in the Middle East, not the nuclear file in one country, the nuclear file in the Middle East. And as I said before in other meetings, that when we address the programs in any country in the region, it is not because it is linked with the Arab-Israeli conflict, but because it is linked with the future of the Middle East, the future of security in the Middle East. That's what should be our concern and should not allow any country to have monopoly or to open the door for another and another and another program of that kind. Having said that, I wish to say a few words about Darfur. Good part of my discussions today, my consultations today, covered this issue of Darfur. We were in Addis Ababa only 10 days ago, and a summit was held in Abuja, Nigeria, to deal with that issue. And the negotiations that led to the Abuja program, Abuja peace program, were held for 2 years with the continued presence of representatives of the UN, African Union, and the Arab League. I declared, and I again say it here, that on Darfur there is a joint African-Arab program, African-Arab policy. There is no African policy and Arab policy, but it's one policy, African-Arab policy. The situation in Darfur was never a situation between Arabs and Africans or a problem between Arabs and Africans, but it was a chaos that was created and had to be dealt with by the government and all of us helping to redress the situation there. Now the discussions center around 2 points emanating from the Abuja Agreement. One, the peacekeeping forces. What kind of peacekeeping operation? Agreed that it should be African, under an African leadership, commander, an African commander, but in cooperation with the United Nations, what is called a joint initiative, hybrid force. What kind of this of force? This is still under negotiations. What number, what is the best number of troops that is needed is also under consideration, but the rest has been agreed. But this is not the issue. The issue is the other side of the Abuja Agreement that called for a reconciliation conference among all Darfurians, a program for development, a money to be earmarked for certain projects, for compensation. This should go hand in hand, the political side, the economic side, and the security side. And that is what we agreed on in our talks here today and previously in Addis Abeba and in Abuja. Is there a window of opportunity? Yes, I say yes, there is a window of opportunity in Darfur. I hope I am right. I think I'm right. Now, before concluding, I have a word to say about this so-called clash of civilizations. You cannot continue to have a policy insensitive to the feelings of the Muslim nation, or to accuse them as a general, as a whole, of being extremist or being terrorist, or to talk about a religion, that a religion calls for that. Because we can say the same about other religions. We can say the same about other people. And if today there is a feud, confrontation, a bloody confrontation between two sects, Muslim sects, and say, you see, they are killing each other. They are right, and this is a bad thing. But we have seen that too in Ireland between Catholics and Protestants, which is a bad thing too. So those things happen. And we have to mobilize our forces in order to resist, to stop such extremist actions, and also extremist philosophies before actions have to be checked. The time has come to recognize that the so-called clash of civilizations has a different name, and in reality, it is a problem between us and Islam, between the West and Islam. And the time has come also to recognize that it is not a religious feud. It is a political problem. A political problem that has to be dealt with properly as a political problem. What is behind that? It could involve the situation in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in the Arab world, and it could involve ideas of arch conservative philosophies. It should involve that. We have to talk about that and be very frank about it, because otherwise the confrontation will continue. It is not just a group that would be defeated or put into prison if we are talking about Islam as a whole. And here, there is a window of opportunity because many people of wider perspectives and sane minds know that such a situation should not continue and that Muslims, Christians, and I even add Jews, should not be at odds and should not be praised, victims of those who foment hatred and tension among civilizations. Finally, the question of reform. We in the Arab world know that the time is now, is even overdue. We'll have to link up with the 21st century. We'll have to be part and parcel of that century. We'll have to be able to contribute to the progresses made by people in that century. And the constitutional work has been done. I submitted a proposal to the Tunis summit, Arab summit, on the question of reform. Democracy, transparency, women's rights, human rights, education, development, etc., and it was approved. And we are following that, and thing that you don't know, that there is a progress report published every year about things that has been done in implementation of this document by way of elections, by way of assessing the role of women, by way of transparency, by way of development or the reform of education. We are moving. Slowly, perhaps. It has to be much quicker, on a quicker pace. But the Middle East and the Arab world in particular is determined to move on and to live in the 21st century. Some would differ, but fine. There must be a debate, a national debate, national debates about that, and then the consensus or the majority would decide the pace of progress and how to move on. And on this, I'm really optimistic. I'm not pessimistic at all. I believe that we are going to move. If I look at the Arab countries one by one today, December 06, and get back December 05 or 04 or 03, there is a change. There is a change. Not much, perhaps. Not as fast as we want, perhaps. But we cannot deny that the Arab world is moving. I hope that we'll continue to move and on a quicker pace in order to achieve what we want to see our countries in the forefront of societies that are contributing to the building a new international system, a new international order. This should not be done in the absence of the Arab nations, but is our responsibility to make our presence felt and our contribution accepted. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Secretary General Musa has agreed to answer a few questions. If I could just impose four rules. One is that you wait for a microphone. Second is that you identify yourself. Third is that you ask only one question so everybody can ask questions. And the fourth is that you ask your question in the form of a question, by which I mean you actually have a question for the Secretary General, not a long statement followed by what do you think.
And fifth, I do that sitting
down. Amen. Okay. Right there. And please wait for a microphone. You've been working, I've been sitting, so we'll just switch.
Mohammed Al-Satouhi, Nile News, Egypt Television. In today's press conference with Prime Minister Tony Blair, President Bush was very reluctant to adopt some of the recommendations of the Iraq study group with regard to a more engaged policy in the Middle East. Is this what you got? Is this your feeling in your meeting today with Dr. Rice? Did you get any impression that they are more intent now to have a more active role in the Middle East and the peace process?
I can say that my feeling, I got the impression, the definite impression from a long discussion with Secretary Rice this afternoon, that the Middle East deserves an action-oriented policy when it comes to the peace process. And for Iraq, the report of Baker Hamilton Group will get a serious consideration by the administration.
There's a question right here.
Mr. Secretary General, so nice to see you. I saw you a couple years ago, and you still look great.
Thank you.
Now you can identify yourself, so everybody can
My name is Walid Maalouf.
He said the right thing.
You know well that Syria has been the mothers of all problems for Iraq and for Lebanon, especially if you have read today what Farouk Sharra said in the Arab papers. Very clearly, he's interfering in these demonstrations to topple the Sanyura government. Will the Arab League have the guts to kick Syria's Assad out? Thank you.
You shouldn't say have the guts, but have the responsibility to. No, an international organization or regional organization does not do that. This is not her job. But it's our job to bring Syria and Lebanon to a position where they can cooperate and deal with many of the problems that you mentioned and like them. And this is our job, is not to let the situation deteriorate between two countries, neighboring countries, sisterly countries, members of the same organization. Then it is our responsibility to do something in order not to let the situation move to a larger or a more dangerous level. This is our responsibility. So this is my answer. I haven't read the statement you are referring to. I was busy the whole day. I didn't even follow the press conference of the president and Mr. Blair. But I assure you that, yes, indeed, we feel it is our responsibility. That's why I went to Lebanon. That's why I'll go to Damascus later on, and I'm working on that to the best of my ability.
Thank you. Thank you.
Barry Schwartz, Associated Press. I had a Syria question for you even before this one, a different one. You spoke in terms of the need for a reconciliation conference in Iraq. Is it possible, is it advisable to go ahead without Syria? Could enough be accomplished without Syria's presence, or considering Syria's proximity, et cetera, they should make every effort to get Syria to go to the conference and to include them and to invite them?
Yes, sir. I was talking about a national reconciliation conference, an Iraqi national conciliation conference under the auspices of the Arab League or with the cooperation with the Arab League and its members. So you cannot exclude Syria or exclude any other country being around in order to help. See, but this is not an international nor regional. It is a national Iraqi national reconciliation.
Some question here, the gentleman in the striped shirt.
My name is Kani Zulam. I'm with the American Kurdish Information Network. You spoke of your hopes for the future, and I want to visit the recent past, and I do so to quote Nathaniel Hawthorne, who says, "Our past is a rough draft of our future." After the invasion of Iraq, some of the top secret documents of Ba'ath regime were seen by the world. One of them, dated December 10, 1989, spoke of the transfer of 18 Kurdish women to the brothels in Egypt. Of these hapless bunch, three were related, a mother and her two daughters, aged 29, 14, and 13 respectively, on the last day of their freedom. The relatives of these women have appealed to the First Lady of Egypt to help them find their loved ones. So far, nothing has come of their effort. Two questions. As a noted spokesperson for the Arab world, can you go on record to condemn this evil act? Two, Would you use your good offices in locating these stolen women of Kurdistan?
Well, look, my brother. To my way of thinking, there is no Kurdish Iraqi or Shia Iraqi or Sunni Iraqi. You are all Iraqis. And to my way of thinking, I do respect the Kurds, their culture, as a sister culture to the Arab culture. I have no difficulty whatsoever to recognize whatever is due to you as a Kurd. If there is a crime, if there is something that happened, as you said, of course it is to be condemned. Who can accept such a thing? But you are bringing an example of what happens in all societies. The problem is that what happened in Iraq, or what used to happen in Iraq, should not happen again. Should not happen again. Iraq should be the Iraq of all its citizens, regardless of religion, of creed, of ethnic origin, of anything. And that's what we are trying to do. That's what we are trying to get out of a reconciliation conference, national conference, national conciliation conference. That's what we are trying to do. I want you to know that I was arranging the role of the Arab literature in the world, attending the Frankfurt Book Fair. And the Arab book was the guest of honor. It was upon my insistence that Kurdish books would be also put among the Arab books. And not only Kurdish, but even the Amazigh in North Africa. I called for their books to be put on the shelves. This is the general Arab culture that has to be wide enough, open enough, open-minded enough to have all its derivatives, all its sisters together with it. So I want you to rest assured that our future is the same and we are going to move together, not against each other and not with the exception of any group that lives in the Arab world.
Question right here. Yep, microphone and name.
My name is Nuruddin Jabnoun. I'm a professor from Georgetown University. Do you think that this administration has sufficient time to shift or to adjust its policy or strategy in Iraq? Thank you.
Yes, indeed. I think the administration has enough time to adjust its policy in Iraq and to reassess its policy in the Middle East, too. That's 2 years, and everything has been put. It is there. The files are ready, and there are recommendations put on the table. So, yes, 2 years are quite enough. If you are asking me my opinion about the time factor, yes, indeed, it is enough.
So, question in the second row right here.
Zuhair Ahmadi, the Syrian TV and radio. The vice president of Syria, Mr. Al-Shara, yesterday was addressing the different political parties and in Syria and was telling them very firmly that Syria was ready and willing to open an embassy in Beirut and a consulate in every Lebanese city once that those who are the warlords of Lebanon, the lords of the sectarian war, and those who are bought by foreign powers would be more respectful of the relations between the two countries, enough for the two countries to open an embassy. With your mission in Lebanon recently, did you find that the role of these people, the previous warlords, are having a role that is being self-destructive to Lebanon, to the Lebanese people, and to the relations between the two countries?
First of all, thank you for the part of your question, which was a statement, just for us to know about that interview. Second, the situation in Lebanon is tense and full of potential problems. Our task is to help the Lebanese move away from confrontation or conflagration. And certainly, Syria as a neighbor should help. And I met with the president, President Assad. That was last year when he told me that, yes, opening an embassy, Syrian embassy in Beirut, is on the agenda, which was confirmed, as you told me now, by Mr. El Sharra.
Thank you. Now the second row right here.
Lise Labitt with CNN. Welcome back, Mr. Secretary General. I'd like to pick up on my colleague's question about Syria. One of the most controversial aspects of this Baker-Hamilton report was on the need to engage Iran and Syria. Now, the United States argues that if you look around the conflicts in the Middle East, Lebanon, the Palestinian conflict, and Iraq, that Syria and, to a larger extent, Iran has their hand in meddling and instigating trouble in all of these conflicts. What do you think of the United States approach that it has not engaged Syria? It seems as if, even though this report is recommending it, that the U.S. is unlikely to engage these countries on playing a more constructive role. Do you think that the isolation approach has worked or that it's time for something new? Thank you.
From my standpoint, I believe this recommendation by Mr. Baker and Hamilton and their committee is a sound recommendation. I find it is in the right direction, talking to all the neighbors of Iraq and all those concerned with the situation in Iraq, including Syria and Iran. The policy to isolate any country doesn't work. They're all countries that have their own influence, big or small, far or near. So when we need to solve a problem, you cannot isolate countries. Otherwise, you will create another problem, an additional problem. And this applies to the Middle East question, where Syria is part of the equation, and you cannot isolate it when it comes to the solution of the Arab-Israeli conflict, too.
Does this refer to Arab countries talking to Israel as well? And should cease to
Through negotiations, of course, through negotiations. They have to, when you negotiate with somebody, you have to talk to him, don't you?
So you would advocate face-to-face negotiations?
I advocate is the resumption of the peace process for a certain period of time to achieve our goal in the nearest possible date, because the time is running out. Time is running out, and the ingredients for a process of peace are there, including the ceasefire, including the statements by both parties. But we do not want a process of peace that will continue for a year and two and three and five and again the same vicious circle that has to have a time frame, especially that every little point, every small point, let alone the big issues, have more than one alternative already considered, already prepared. So we don't need to use much time or to waste much time.
Question right here. This, the lady in the lovely purple jacket.
Yeah.
Mr. Secretary General, who the Tawfiq al-Ahram newspaper?
Who?
In your discussions with Secretary Rice today, did you also get any impression that she's interested in a commitment or go through with the recommendation of the committee on the initiative on Middle East? And what is your own assessment to the recommendation on the comprehensive peace in the Middle East and the meeting in Madrid conference between Syria and Israel and Lebanon and the rest of
who
them.
Who else? No, continue. Tell me who.
That's it. It's only four.
Okay. Thank you, Ahuda. This is the first day of the report, so I cannot have, as you said, a commitment by the Secretary of State on any of the recommendations. We're talking generally. Yes. So, and the impression is a positive impression. Yeah. It is well received And recommendation by recommendation, it will be considered by the administration. We hope that this recommendation, among others, would be also put into effect. But it refers to another problem, which is the Arab-Israeli conflict, which I was talking about, and that it stands on its own feet. This is the real old problem, the Arab-Israeli conflict, that will decide the either way where the Middle East would go. So it is, and it is known, it is agreed, it is accepted that we have to address this situation, and as soon as we can, including the possibility of an international conference, as you said, the Madrid thing, or any other mechanism. We shouldn't stick to one mechanism. I myself believe that we need an international conference, but others do not believe that. Others said, okay, why not a group under the quartet? Fine, if it is workable, do it. But the sooner the better, and within a time frame. It cannot be left for another 15 years, come and go and invoice and pictures and tables. That's enough. This is finished. We want to move and move quickly as we can. On the question of the Arab-Israeli conflict.
The lady right there, right next to you.
Sue Fleming from Reuters. Just to get back to the Syria-Iran issue, did you get the impression from Secretary Rice that she was interested in moving towards dealing directly with Syria and Iran, particularly in resolving the conflict in Iraq?
I was thinking while you were asking me to decline the answer. Declined to answer. But I still think that all recommendations are under consideration by the administration. And I cannot say anything that would commit the administration at this stage for anything. But we talked about it, about almost each and every recommendation of the report.
That's 79 recommendations in 40 minutes.
Yeah, you see?
Right here. What? Oh. Wait for the microphone.
Christopher Adams, an attorney in Washington, D.C. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
You mentioned Amazigh. I am an Amazigh. My question is about human rights in the Arab world. Morocco has scored big achievement in that field concerning women's rights, especially the Mudawana. My question is, to what extent, I know you mentioned women's rights, but to what extent the Arab League is introducing the Moroccan experience, or at least explaining it to their members, to its members?
What experience? In what field?
Women's rights. Morocco has scored a big achievement in women's rights, especially the Mudawana. So my question is, to what extent the Arab League has a program about women's rights, to what extent they are introducing the Mudawana experience, under the new leadership in Morocco, to what extent they are introducing it to the members, to its members. Thank you.
I like your pronunciation of the Mudawana. So, yes, indeed. Now, we are aware of this Mudawana, and it has been sent to us as a formal contribution by Morocco in the field of human rights, which now is very active in the Arab League. We are drafting the final version of a new charter for human rights, Arab charter for human rights, with the mechanism to receive complaints. So the experience, yes, indeed, is a very good contribution. The Mudawana. Okay.
So right there. So right in the back of on the aisle.
Good afternoon. My name is Leah Kaczynski. I'm with the Monterey Institute Center for Nonproliferation Studies. I'd like to ask you a question about the announcements of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Algeria, Morocco, and Tunisia recently about having more robust nuclear technology programs in their countries. Has there been discussion about these announcements within the Arab League, or discussion of wider coordination among these states or other Arab states in developing nuclear technology? And do you have concerns about how the international community will react to these developments, specifically given
the scrutiny? I want you to know that those programs, I don't know whether all the countries you mentioned have already announced that, but some of them did. Mm-hmm. They are talking about peaceful nuclear programs. Okay. Peaceful nuclear programs within the meaning of, within the confines of the Treaty on Non-Proliferation and under the supervision of the International Atomic Agency. So this is perfectly in order. Perfectly in order. They are under international supervision within a peaceful framework and for the benefit of the people on the question of development and generating energy and so on, which all those societies need. The problem is not this. The problem is nuclear military programs producing bombs, producing nuclear weapons. This is the problem. And none of the countries you mentioned is or has the intention to embark on such a program. See, there are only two countries, one of them known to have the program and one of them said to be trying to get a program. But the rest of countries are talking about peaceful program,
right,
which is all right.
I appreciate that. Is there any discussion within the Arab League, though, about coordinating these peaceful nuclear programs?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. We are talking about that.
Okay. The lady right here in the turquoise. Or is that slate?
Mr. Secretary General, welcome to D.C. My name Jihan Mansour from the Egyptian TV. And after 3 years in Iraq, we see the United States of America is heading towards the Arab countries to help in Iraq. Not throwing the ball as usual to the United Nations. How do you read this situation?
Simply, I feel we have a problem. We, the Arab world, we have a problem with the situation in Iraq. Exactly as the Americans, as the United States of America has a problem in Iraq. So we have to do something. It's not advisable to play witness, just see what's going on. Iraq is an Arab country. And not only an Arab country to reckon with, it's a very important and basic Arab country that we cannot let it go down the drain. So we have a responsibility, as we have a problem. We have a problem, therefore we have a responsibility. This is the time to work together to save the situation in Iraq.
There's a question right there.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary General. In so many of the countries...
Can you identify yourself, please?
Yes, excuse me. Hi, Malka from CSIS. Thanks, John. In so many of the crises...
But you didn't know that.
I'll pause for applause as well after. In so many of the crises and the countries that you mentioned, Palestine, Lebanon, Iraq, we find non-state actors are playing an increasingly influential role in shaping the course of political events. And I was wondering, in your mind, how do you see the role of an institution like the Arab League playing, and what role does the Arab League play in a Middle East political environment that is increasingly shaped by non-state actors like Hamas and Hezbollah and other militias? Thank you.
The world is full of non-state actors nowadays. The civil society, the NGOs, and the organizations you mentioned, and others, they are all playing a role in the new international situation. Years back, it was only states. But as you know, societies like this one, the American society, Western societies, do push, support the NGOs to play their role. This is a non-state actor, right? Okay. Things have gone perhaps out of control with other organizations that are bent to use force or to use violence. This is our responsibility, all of us, states and organizations, to deal with them, but at the same time, to deal with the reasons behind why are they so violent, to deal with the reasons behind that wave of violence, or philosophy of violence, or philosophy of provocation, or philosophy that advocates theories of superiority All those things have to be put together. Yes, indeed, we have to deal with issues pertaining to the non-state actors, especially the negative performance of some of them. So the Arab League, like the United Nations, like the European Union, will do whatever we can. But in doing whatever we can, we have also to contribute to dealing with the reasons behind the feeling of frustration and anger that has helped such organizations perform, as you say.
There's a lady right on the aisle there in the black.
Olivia Kizabedi from NHK.
What's NHK?
Japan Broadcasting Corporation.
Japanese television.
Okay.
The Iraq Study Group report, as everyone knows, calls for greater cooperation of Iraq's neighbors. How do you envision the role of the Arab League and Egypt as brokers between the United States and these powers, especially Syria? And, thank you.
Well, I don't think that Egypt is just a broker between the United States and whoever, but Egypt is a major country in the region and has a responsibility to push forward a peaceful policy or to work for stability in the region. As for the Arab League, we are doing the same. We are not just agents here or there. We have a basic interest in achieving a fair peace and stability, which requires dealing with the situation in Iraq along the lines we were discussing, situation in Palestine and the Middle East, the situation in the Middle East, as we were talking, and other problems too. It is not a question of how to broker this. You know, the broker, who is the broker, and the one honest broker and would produce something is the United States. Because it is not a Middle Eastern country. It is a superpower. What we need from the United States is an honest brokership. That's what we need. And that what would succeed. Only this would succeed.
Mm-hmm. Gentleman on the aisle has been very patient.
Yes, indeed.
Tarek Rashid from the Middle East News Agency of Egypt. We welcome you in Washington. And I have three quick shots. First, you declared in the week of the Israel war in Lebanon that the peace process is dead and a roadmap is no longer a mechanism. Do you still insist on that? Have you changed your mind? Second.
Wait. Let me answer this one. Yes. Yes. It's still dead. But there are prospects to revive it. Because when I said that the peace process is dead, at the same press conference and the same sentence, I said, we are going to the United Nations to try to revive it. You see? So, yes, indeed, there is no peace process. But our job is to bring back the peace to track. And we don't need a peace process that stays 15 years as the one. It's within a reasonably short time and while the administration is still in office.
Did the UN respond positively to your request?
That's the second question.
No, the same.
No,
just the
second. You only get one.
Okay, the second one.
Trying to get four.
I'll take the second one. Under four, you said that there is an Arab-African program that's going on to settle the issue in Darfur.
Yes.
Do you mean that the U.S. is posing an obstacle and that it must keep on side?
Why? Why does I don't see the logic, the logical link.
Because you said it's an Arab
we
African.
We have an Arab African policy.
Mm-hmm.
We have a unified policy to deal with the question of Darfur, when it comes to conciliation, or peacekeeping forces, or developmental aid policy. This does not exclude the roles of others. But insofar as we are concerned, and they are concerned, we have one policy. At the beginning, if you remember, there was an accusation that this situation, what was going on in Darfur, was Arab troops or Arab tribes against African tribes, which was totally false among the camp. There's so many disinformation, misinformation that were circulating at that time. So we decided immediately to cut this short. We met formally, the AU and the Arab League, and adopted one policy. So that doesn't mean that we don't need the United Nations, for example. Mm-hmm. No, it is not sidelining the United Nations. It has to play a role there. And also others who would use their good offices to help.
Okay, thank you. The third one is on Somalia.
No. Somalia doesn't count as the other. Okay, because we have a whole bunch of other people who haven't asked a single question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. There's a gentleman here who's been very patient, in the second row.
You got two. It's good.
Thank you very much. My name is Khalid Musa, Embassy of Sudan. Thank you very much, Excellency, for your personal and institutional constructive role in solving the Darfur problem. Have you gotten assurances from your consultation with the Secretary today that the American fully support the outcome of Abuja conference? And number two is there is a mounting concern among the AU about the pledges of the Arab League that is not materialized yet. Thank you.
Again, what's the second part?
The pledges of the Arab League, the funding of the Arab League to the AU is not materialized yet.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, on the first point, I can say that the Abuja peace agreement is supported by all of us, including the U.S. This is my impression of the talks which you are asking me about. Yes, indeed, they are. As for the Arab contribution, we are working on that, and money is now coming. It's a bit late, but we worked on that, of course. Thank you for asking this question.
Can we take two more questions, maybe?
Two more? Okay, fine.
Do you have a stamina? Okay. Fine. So the gentleman there in the blue shirt, and then the woman in the green will get the last question.
This will have an extra pay, you know, the two questions.
It might be late in coming.
Dan DeLuce, the AFP. Are you concerned at all that there is a possibility of a U.S. tilt towards the Shia community in Iraq, that out of frustration or desperation that somehow U.S. policies may be abandoning efforts to include the Sunni community in Iraq?
What we are working for is conciliation that would include the Shia, the Sunna, the Kurds, and all others. Again, I have to reiterate that a sound policy would be to not to fall into the trap of encouraging sectarian strife or animosity. It's not a question of Shia or Sunnah. The Shia or any, as the Prime Minister, the current Prime Minister, they are all working towards the ending, putting an end to this chaos in Iraq. An Iraqi drive by Shia or by Sunnah or by Kurds or by whoever is what we need. But you won't find here in the Arab League any position against Shia or against Sunnah. We are for Iraq. Iraq alone, with all its people, regardless of their faith, regardless of their creed, regardless of their ethnic origin. Again, I say that if we want Iraq to return to health and stability, we will have to put aside, to resist any sectarian conflict or confrontation, or competition, or plans to sidestep others. There is no difference, and I'm really very sorry, that this question of Shia and Sunnah came to the fore, and now everybody is asking us about Shia and about Sunnah. Those who allowed this to happen, allowed such a question to come to the fore, have committed a major mistake against Iraq and stability in that region.
The last question, the lady in the green all the way in the back.
Thanks. I'm Michelle Kellerman with National Public Radio. I want to go back just quickly on Darfur. The Bush administration earlier this year was basically saying We want UN troops in Sudan or else. And I wonder if the Bush administration is asking you to put any pressure on Sudan to accept, to give the UN a larger role in peacekeeping in Darfur. And then if I can ask more broadly also, you have conflict in Darfur, CAR, Chad, Somalia. How worried are you? How worried is the Arab League about this sort of arc of violence across Africa, and what can you do about it?
Well, if you call it an arc of violence, it is very worrying, I must say. So I hope that the term is not really accurately interpreting the situation or describing the situation. The question of international forces has been considered by the AU, UN, and us, including the US, Britain, and the five permanent members in general. And we agreed that the forces should be predominantly African. Predominantly African. This is the consensus of Addis Ababa on, I believe, the 5th of this month, of the 28th of last month. This is the consensus. It is a force, a peacekeeping force, predominantly African and under African command, but with the contribution of the United Nations personnel on certain logistical and other issues that are necessary for the force to be robust and work. So this is the situation. There is no difference of that. Well, as we, you have another question. Is there any other question that I have not answered?
It's a remarkable breadth. Elise, you want to come in at the very end? Because Elise is from CNN, she gets...
That is a special privilege given, benefit given to the CNN. Okay.
Can you give her a microphone?
Only the United States, we need to get back to being... It needs to get back to being an honest broker.
Yes.
But during the war in Lebanon over the summer, during the Palestinian conflict, I can't quote you exact times that you've said this, but I know many leaders in the region have suggested, at least, that the United States has lost its hand as the honest lost its role as the honest broker, and that its image in the region just isn't what it used to be, and it's time for other brokers in the region maybe to join the United States, that it can play that special role that it has all these years. Has it changed, or can the U.S. get back to the kind of super Uber broker that it used to be? Thanks.
Is that the technical term, Uber broker?
What's this Uber?
Uber, over in German.
Uber in German, Uber, yes. Yeah. I hope it's not Uber Alles.
It's not.
So what was the question?
Can the U.S. still play the role that people call on the U.S. to play,
yes,
as the broker, or yes, has the U.S. lost the capacity to play that role?
Now, I must say that, yes, indeed. At a certain stage, it lost that capacity. But still, an honest broker role is open for the United States, and only the U.S. can do that. That's why we hope that the honest broker role will be resumed by the United States. And I believe there is this, the intention is there, the capacity is there, the situation calls for that. Okay. Thank you.
I want to thank you all for coming. I want to thank the Secretary General not only for taking time out of a very busy day, but showing a remarkable breadth. Thank you.